following podcast is for information purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for psychotherapy with a trained mental health professional. No radio.
Rational radio.
Today on Rational Radio, you will learn how to uncover your irrational beliefs that contribute to your unhealthy feelings and self-defeating behaviors. You will learn how to plug this into the ABC model. You will learn how to dispute those irrational beliefs. And also, you will hear two examples of disputing, one by Albert Ellis and one by myself. Welcome to Rational Radio. I'm Micah Perkins. You may have noticed a little bit of a different intro today. We had my son making his podcasting debut announcing Rational Radio. Today we're going to talk about disputing. Disputing is the cornerstone of REBT. Disputing is identifying and challenging these irrational beliefs, putting them to the test in order to poke holes in the logic of the belief, and then to learn and ingrain new self-helping beliefs. Other theories of psychotherapy focus more on insight, that if a person just gets insight into their behavior, then they're going to get better. Or possibly more on feelings, that if a person just expresses their feelings, that alone will make them better. REBT is different in that it's more based on learning, that we learn these irrational beliefs, either from others, our parents, our society, or things that we construct on our own, or things that we teach ourselves to be true. And that in order to feel better and get better, we have to unlearn these things and learn more helpful beliefs. So if you think about any time that you've learned anything, let's talk about driving a car. Driving a car, when you think about it, there's a lot of complex actions that go in driving a car. You get into the car, you put your key in the ignition, you turn it, you put your foot on the accelerator, your foot on the brake, you drive down the street, you watch for cars, you put your brake to stop. All these complex things. Whenever you first start learning to drive a car, it's very jerky. You are consciously thinking about what I'm doing to stop, to move. Eventually it gets to the point where if you practice driving the car over and over and over again, it becomes somewhat second nature. People are able to drive cars while talking on their cell phones, while doing their makeup, while thinking about what they're going to get at the grocery store. So it eventually becomes so ingrained that you don't have to really even think about it anymore. And that's how these beliefs are formed. Initially, whenever we're forming these beliefs, we may be very conscious of them. But eventually they become so ingrained that they become like second nature. We don't even think about them anymore. So whenever we talk about disputing these irrational beliefs, at first when you start disputing them, it may seem very awkward. It may not feel quite right. It's going to take practice and working on these beliefs over and over and over again, disputing them over and over and over again, before it starts to become a habit, before they start to become ingrained that they feel right. So disputing then is challenging these irrational beliefs and passionately arguing against these irrational beliefs. So disputing then is finding evidence against these irrational beliefs, disputing them cognitively, challenging them cognitively, also challenging them emotively, with a lot of passion. Ellis has discussed that beliefs, feelings, and behaviors are seldom separate. They often coexist with each other and overlap with each other. So these irrational beliefs are not only held cognitively, but they're also held emotively and behaviorally. Oftentimes, we formulate these irrational beliefs after certain adversities. Once adversity has happened, then we form these irrational beliefs and we begin to practice these irrational beliefs by repeatedly using self-statements. And then we begin to act on these beliefs over and over and over again until eventually these irrational philosophies become so ingrained that they seem and feel absolutely true. And a lot of times whenever you talk with people, they may say, well, I know what you're saying, that this doesn't really make a lot of intellectual sense, but still it feels true for me. That's one of the characteristics of these irrational beliefs, is that they not only seem cognitively true, but that they also just feel true to the person. So then whenever we dispute, we're going to dispute them cognitively, but also emotively and behaviorally. So let's first talk about how we dispute these irrational beliefs cognitively. There's three different types of disputing. There's empirical disputing, which has also been called realistic disputing. And the basic question here is this belief consistent with reality? Second type of disputing is called logical disputing. The basic question is, how does this logically connect? How does the irrational component, the demanding, the low frustration tolerance, the awfulizing, the people rating, logically follow from my rational desire or preference? For example, just because I prefer to be liked, why must I absolutely be liked? The last is called pragmatic or practical disputing. The basic question here is, does this belief hinder me from achieving my goals? So these are the types of questions I want to ask myself whenever I'm disputing. Also, whenever I'm disputing, I want to do it passionately. Because these irrational beliefs are held very strongly, with strong emotion, that the person feels that they're true, then I also want to passionately argue against them. This is one of the common errors of people who try to do disputing, is that they don't put that passionate component in there. So they may ask themselves these questions, why must I be liked? Why is this awful? Well, there's no reason why I must be liked. This isn't the worst thing ever. And it's done very dryly. But in order to overcome these irrational beliefs, we have to passionately argue against them. I want you to envision some of those court dramas that are on TV. Maybe Matlock that was out years ago, or Law and Order. Imagine that person that's in the courtroom. Now, whenever they are arguing for their case, do they say, Mr. Smith, were you there on the night of October 30th when the person was killed? Was there blood on your shirt? No, that's not what they do. You watch them and they say, Mr. Smith, were you there on October 30th? Yeah, I was. Was there blood found on your shirt? Yeah, there was. I conclude, Your Honor, that this man is the murderer, not my defendant. Obviously, he must be the one that killed the man. Do you remember Johnny Cochran, whenever he defended O.J. Simpson? He didn't say, hey guys, if the glove doesn't fit, you gotta let my defendant go. No, he said, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. And he kept saying it, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. And he said it passionately, over and over and over again, to prove the case for his client. So they do this passionately, not dryly, without emotion, in order to passionately prove their point, to try to win over the jury. So they put this emotion into it to try to prove their point. And so it's important whenever we do this disputing that we do it passionately. The last thing that's involved with disputing is that we also do this behaviorally, that we not only do it cognitively, and that we not only do it passionately, but that we act against these irrational beliefs. That if, let's say, I'm a shy person and that I'm overcoming the irrational belief of other people must not disapprove of me, and so I'm able to passionately dispute that, well, at some point then I'm going to need to act against that. I would then have to be more extroverted at a party, to walk up to people, to talk to them, to prove to myself that this belief is not true. So it's important to do all three of those things, cognitively, emotively, and behaviorally. So let's briefly talk about how all of this is going to be used in real life. How are we going to fit these things into the ABC system? Usually, people will first notice the C. Remember, the C is the consequence. The C is the unhealthy feeling, self-defeating behaviors. Most of the time, people will all of a sudden recognize, man, I have just been really angry. Man, I just got finished yelling and screaming at this person. Then, most of the time, people will then take a step back and identify the A, the activating event. What event, feeling, thought that triggered this series of self-defeating thoughts, feelings, and behaviors? Well, it was whenever this person accused me of not being honest. So I identified the C, I then identified the A. Now I need to identify the B, the irrational belief that contributed to these unhealthy feelings and actions. Now that can be a little bit tricky because I have to drill down past maybe some more superficial thoughts in order to get down to the irrational belief. So whenever I ask myself, what were some of the thoughts that were going through my head whenever this person accused me of being dishonest? Well, my first thought was, who does he think he is? All right, well, what else was I telling myself? He doesn't know anything about me. Okay, well, all these things may be true, but these are what Beck would call automatic thoughts. These are very superficial thoughts. So what I want to do is drill down past those things and get down to the irrational belief. Now, if you remember, in the past, we've talked about irrational beliefs consist of a demand, a godlike must, should, ought, have to be, plus at least one of three derivatives. I can't stand it, awfulizing, this is the worst thing ever, or people rating. You are no good of a person, or this makes me no good of a person. So I want to get past more of these superficial thoughts and then to put this into that formula. So whenever he accused me of being dishonest, what irrational belief was triggered? If I put it into the formula, I might come up something with, he must not accuse me of being dishonest. And because he is accusing me of being dishonest, then that makes him a no good, rotten person. That then would be the irrational belief. So whenever I start disputing, then I'm going to dispute that must and that people rating. One of the things about disputing the demands, the low frustration tolerance, the awfulizing, and the people rating is that I already have an ace in the hole. Just like the lawyer on those shows, they have their surprise witness. I already have an ace in the hole, and my ace in the hole is that I already know that these things don't make sense. I already know that demanding is irrational, that having godlike commands that reality be different than what it is irrational. I already know that believing that I physically can't stand something is usually, most of the time, irrational. I already know that awfulizing, believing something is the worst thing ever, is irrational. I already know that people rating, that thinking that because somebody does something bad, that makes them a completely horrible, rotten person that's unable of doing anything good at all. I already know that that's irrational. Or, to put the same thing on myself, that because I do something bad, that makes me completely rotten, that nothing that I ever do will be any good at all, is irrational. So I already know the outcome of the case. I already know that these things don't make sense. So whenever I am disputing these things, I am basically reminding myself that these things don't make sense. And I'm trying to ingrain this into my own head. It's important whenever we do disputing that we not only do it in the moment, right after I had a fight with my wife and I'm feeling angry and I'm driving off in the car, that I do disputing then, but also that I do disputing proactively. Before I get in a fight with somebody, that I work on doing my disputing. One of the habits that I have is that I work on doing disputing a couple of times a day. And it's not even really for very long. It's maybe takes me 15 minutes total in my day. Now, if I'm having a particular issue that's coming up that's maybe a little bit more difficult for me to deal with, then I may lengthen my time that I dispute. But I try to do some disputing every day. And I have a couple of my own pet irrational beliefs that I have to work on disputing. Over the years, these irrational beliefs have gotten much better, that I don't use them nearly as often. But still, from time to time, they creep up. And so I just continually remind myself that those things aren't true. And as a result, then, as I said, they don't come up nearly as often. So let's give some examples then of disputing. First example I'm going to give is from Dr. Ellis, and this is from his book, Feeling Better, Getting Better, Staying Better. And so he is disputing the belief that because I would very much like to keep succeeding at important goals and gaining the approval of other people, I absolutely must do so at all times and under all conditions. So first, it's his realistic disputing, his empirical disputing. And he says, why must I absolutely keep succeeding at important goals and keep gaining the approval of others? Where is it written that I always have to do so? What law of the universe says that I must? What social law says that I have to? Is it factual that I absolutely must do so at all times under all conditions? So his empirical answer is, there is no reason why I absolutely must keep succeeding at important goals and must keep gaining the approval of other people. It is only written that I must in my mistaken head, not in the universe and not in social reality. It is not a fact that I must, only an assumption. It would be highly preferable if I always kept succeeding at important goals and kept gaining the approval of other people, but this is most unlikely, considering my fallibility and the prejudices of others. I'd better stick to my preferring to achieving these ends and not make them into an unrealistic necessity. Logical disputing. Does it follow that because I would very much like to keep succeeding at important goals and winning the approval of other people, that therefore I absolutely have to do so? Must I get what I want because I strongly desire it? His logical answer. Of course it doesn't follow that because I want something, I must get what I want. If it did follow, that would be lovely, but it doesn't in the least. Practical disputing, or his pragmatic disputing. Where will I be if I think and feel that I absolutely must succeed at important goals and keep winning the approval of other people? What results am I likely to get? Will my insisting on this actually help me get what I very much want? And his answer. My insisting on getting what I want will very likely make me anxietize about the possibility of not getting it and depress myself when I actually do not get it. My anxiety about possibly not getting what I think I must get, achieving my important goals and winning the approval of others, will interfere with my actually getting what I want, since my anxiety and self-depressing will make me less efficient in gaining what I want. When people see my anxiety, see how needy I am, they'll likely turn away from me and not approve of me or help me get what I want. So that's one of Dr. Ellis's examples. Next, I'm going to give you an example of my own disputing. And you'll notice that my style is just a little bit different. And of course, whenever you use your disputing, yours will be different from mine or from anybody else's, because it will be something that will be most helpful for you. But here is an example of me disputing the irrational belief that others must like me or else I can't stand it. It's the worst thing ever. And if others don't like me, then it means that I am no good. Why must others like me? What law of the universe says that Micah must be liked by everyone? Did God part the heavens, shine a heavenly light on me, and say, from this day forward, Micah shalt be liked by all? Did God put some sort of aura around me so that as soon as I entered the room, others would automatically, instantly like me? No, that didn't happen. I do not have godlike powers that mandates others must like me at all times. I would like other people to like me. I would like other people to think well of me. But it is unrealistic to expect that all people will like me at all times. It is unrealistic to expect that people will not give me a negative rating from time to time. Look at the Queen of England. She has people who like her and people who don't. Look at the President of the United States. He has people that like him and people who don't. Human beings naturally rate things. They rate the weather, they rate cars, they rate movies. They have a natural tendency to rate themselves. So why in hell will they not rate me? Of course they will rate me. It is undesirable to be disliked. I like to be liked by others. It behooves me to be nice to others so that others will want to be around me and will be more prone to be nice to me and will be more likely to help me achieve my goals. But I cannot make others like me. Some people will like me and others won't. Too bad. So when a person dislikes me, how is it that I can't stand it? Is being rated negatively going to kill me? No. People have disliked me in the past and I have survived it. So even though it's undesirable, I can survive it. When someone dislikes me, how is that the worst thing ever? Again, being disliked is often uncomfortable and undesirable, but it's not the worst thing ever. If someone came to me and asked me, what would you rather have happen? Be disliked or lose both of your arms? I would rather be disliked. If someone asked me, what would you rather have happen? Be disliked or have an earthquake kill 1 million people? I would rather be disliked. So being disliked is undesirable, but it's not the worst thing ever. On a catastrophe scale, with 10 being the annihilation of the entire human race, being disliked by someone ranks at about 0.2. How is it that being disliked by someone makes me less of a person? When someone decides to not like me, does my DNA magically rearrange itself? Do I all of a sudden become less than a human? A new subhuman species? No, that's ridiculous. I continue to be a person when someone dislikes me. So being disliked, although undesirable, does not make me less of a person. I'm still a person who happens to be disliked by one or more other fallible human beings who are most likely themselves also worried about being liked or disliked. Is the belief that I must be liked by others helpful to me? Although I'd like to be liked by others, if I obsess that I must be liked by others, then I will focus all of my time and energy on being liked. I will not do what's best for me, because I'll be too focused on what others will think about me. I'll be obsessed with focusing on making others happy, and not have enough energy to focus on making myself happy. Therefore, wanting to be disliked by others, and me treating others kindly to make it more likely that I'm liked, is desirable. But obsessing that I must be liked by others is not only an unrealistic demand, but also costs me too much in time and energy. So that's an example of me disputing my irrational beliefs. Some of the things that you may notice is that, first of all, I tend to combine the questions and the answer in the same flowing paragraph. For me, that's just something that is easier for me to do. That's just my style that I prefer to do. That's more helpful for me. Also, something I tend to do in my disputing is I use a lot of sarcasm. Now, I'm not condemning myself for having these beliefs, but what I am trying to point out is the absurdity of these beliefs. I also tend to use a lot of imagery, that image of God putting an aura around me so that as soon as I enter the room, then people magically, automatically have to like me. As I'm disputing that, I see that image in my head. And it's almost kind of comical because I realize that that's obviously just absurd that doesn't happen. And so that's some of the things that I like to add in my own disputing work that's helpful for me. So again, this is a debate. This is an argument. This is passionately proving your case to why these things aren't true. This is so much more than just one or two sentences of, there's no reason why people must like me. There's no evidence that says that they have to like me. So much more than that. This is this argument, this case against that irrational belief. Now, not only would I do my dispute that I just read a minute ago, not only would I do that cognitively and passionately, but I'd also act against those things. And so then I would start to choose, what are some activities that I could do? And one of the more famous activities is the shame attacking exercises. And we may talk more about this in future podcasts, but basically shame attacking exercises is when a person does something that is silly, something that other people may look on them and say, man, that guy's an idiot. And that we do that to prove to ourselves that it's not awful, it's not terrible when other people look down on us. For example, some of the examples that Ellis gives is being on a subway and yelling out every stop. And so people may start to look at you like, man, this guy's nuts because he's yelling out every stop along the way. That just because people think poorly of us doesn't mean that we're rotten, horrible people. And it's not awful when people do it, and it's not terrible. It's not the worst thing ever that we can't stand it. So we're not only doing these things cognitively, but we're also picking actions, picking behaviors to act against these things. So I encourage you to work on learning how to dispute your irrational beliefs and then to consistently practice on disputing those irrational beliefs over and over and over again until it gets to the point where these beliefs affect you much less. You're able to replace them with those more helpful beliefs. Whenever they pop their ugly head up again, you can work on disputing them again and eventually may get to the point where these irrational beliefs hardly ever pop up. And for some, it may get to the point where they never pop up again. Keep practicing. Disputing is such an important skill and concept that we're going to spend more podcasts in the future talking about disputing, talking about more ways that you can work on disputing your irrational beliefs. Well, thank you for joining me today. I want to encourage you to keep working on these techniques. These are new skills. At first, they may feel very awkward. But if you keep working on them, just like learning to drive a car, eventually get to the point where you'll be able to do this second nature. Also, I want to encourage you to come to my website, rabt-cbt.net, where I'll have the notes for this podcast. Also, there's other articles there about RABT. I'll see you next time.